Carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good trip.
Thanks. I'll go around this way. Excuse me.
I drive by yours.
Thank you.
Yeah, you go to the left. Yeah. Next door. Go on and then take a left.
All right, thanks. We'll move on to item 3, which I believe everybody is here for. Yeah, we have 2 seats that just opened up. If there's, is there anybody out there that might want to? Okay. Pause for a minute while we get some new material. Okay.
Gene, my title looks different than his title.
Is it just that you know what's going on?
Okay, never mind. We're now titled for. Thank you.
Yeah, it's the same, sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, we'll get things started here, all in the hearing. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region. Consider adoption of a limited term amendment to NTMP provisions of order number R1-2009-0038, categorical waiver of waste discharge requirements for discharges related to timber harvest activities on non-federal lands in the North Coast region. This item has been properly noticed. A sheet explaining the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. You swear or affirm that you'll tell the truth in this matter?
I do. Okay,
thank you. This time we'll start the staff presentation. I'd like to make quick mention that, and I know Mr. St. John will allude to this as well, but just we will be taking oral comments from folks today. This is not your last opportunity or your only opportunity to comment on this. We have a very robust stakeholder involvement pathway, and Matt will allude to that. So with that, Matt, please.
Okay, thank you. Chairman Hales, members of the board, and all of you that came, from some of you from very long distances to be here. It shows how much you care about this item. Appreciate your being here. Did I say I'm Matt St. John? I'm the acting division chief for our timber and non-point source division. So this is an outline of our presentation this morning. I'm going to give a little bit of background just for context about non-industrial timber management plans, the waivers of waste discharge requirements that have been in effect to address these, discuss the petitions that we received regarding the non-industrial timber management plan elements of the timber waiver, which led us to taking this limited term amendment, describe that review that we're proposing to do, take board member questions, and then, of course, hear from the many public that want to speak to this item. I did mention before, I'll mention it again, that on our sign-in sheet, there's a column on the left-hand side of the sign-in sheet to check, just to make sure that we continue to include you as we have follow-up meetings, both board meetings as well as staff meetings on this item. So non-industrial timber management plans were created by the legislature in 1991. These are timber management plans that are for our long-term plans for areas up to 2,500 acres. These are for sustained yield or uneven aged management, meaning no clear cutting, and again for sustained yield management. The first NTMTs were approved following that legislation in 1992. Since that time, there are a total of 507 NTMPs within our region, with an average size of about 400 acres, 460 acres. The total acreage in our region is just over 233,000 acres. Most of the forest practice rules governed by the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE equally apply to non-industrial timber management plans as they do for industrial management on timber harvest plans. Just for some context, this chart shows the number of approved NTMPs in the North Coast region since the beginning of having these in 1992 through the last year, with it peaked in around 2000, and there's been some decline since then. Note that this generally mimics the stock market, I think, to some degree. This map just shows a distribution of the NTMPs within our region. The red border with the yellow insides identify the NTMP land areas throughout the North Coast region. And as you see, they're primarily in the coastal areas in Humboldt, Sonoma, and Mendocino counties. So after the original legislation enacting NTMPs, there have been a number of waivers of waste discharge requirements to provide coverage for these timber management plans. And I'll be speaking to a number of these further in my presentation. In 2004, our board adopted a waiver covering NTMPs. All NTMPs were covered under the 2004 waiver, as well as covering what were characterized as low-impact timber harvest plans. This waiver included 14 eligibility criteria, various conditions required to be met to be covered for THPs. It required the development of erosion control plans for the proposed harvest areas, the notice of timber operation areas within a larger NTMP area. And the 2004 waiver specified that erosion control plans were not required for those NTMPs and THPs that had been previously waived under what was the 2003 waiver. Brings us to 2009. The legislature requires that waivers be renewed on a five-year basis. So 2009 was the time that we needed to renew our waiver, and we made some revisions to it at that time. We made revisions to the NTMP components as well as to the THP components. And the primary revisions are what are highlighted here in the bullet points. It required that previously waived NTMPs were to apply for coverage in order to meet the waiver conditions. There were requirements associated with retention of canopy shade trees. And there were new additional requirements associated with the development of erosion control plans for the entire NTMP land area. The change was not just developing erosion control plans for the notice of timber operation areas. And the final one was the requirement to develop road plans for the NTMP areas, which were to begin developing and submitting those plans after a five-year period, which would come into effect in 2014. I want to highlight that this waiver was adopted in June 2009, and prior to the Board of Forestry adoption of the anadromous sunlight protection rules, which went into effect in January 2010. So simply put, the goals when staff brought the proposed revisions to the 2009 waiver, the goals were to provide consistent application of for control of sediment discharges to all associated with all timber operations. So both timber harvest plans as well as MTMPs. That was the goal. Second goal was to preserve and restore natural shade conditions in order to meet our temperature objective, and really was a primary tool for implementing temperature total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, that have been developed for many of our water bodies in the North Coast. So as it says in the next bullet, to therefore implement those temperature TMDLs as well as sediment TMDLs. And finally, it was our goal to provide flexibility for landowners and CAL FIRE. Well, there were concerns about those changes, which led to several petitions to our state board. Immediately in the month following our board's adoption of the new waiver, there were three petitions filed. The primary concerns, and we're certainly not trying to represent all of them here, but the primary concerns were the requirement to have erosion control plans developed retroactively and applied to existing NTMPs that previously had not had a requirement for developing erosion control plans. Second concern had to do with the canopy retention requirements and the belief that these requirements overlap with the then existing forest practice rules and the anadromous semonid protection rules. And final concern had to do with the development of road plans and the position that road plans submitted to our agency were not necessary. In response to those petitions, our staff are making a recommendation for this limited term amendment to the waiver. This was in response to the petitions. The purpose, as we are casting it, is to assess the potential gaps in water quality protections associated with non-industrial timber management plans between those rules and the forest practice rules and our agency's water quality requirements as defined in the basin plan. So as we have said in discussions, we refer to this as the pause button amendment. The pause button is to give us time to review these potential gaps in protections, and then following that review, come back to our board with recommendations. The potential outcomes of these recommendations really are two paths. Staff will either recommend revisions to the NTMP provisions that are in the 2009 waiver, or we will recommend re-implementation of the 2009 waiver provisions. So what in fact does this limited term amendment do? It suspends the 2009 waiver provisions for just for NTMPs, not for timber harvest plans, until February 2012. So at this point, a little under a year. And during this time, the 2004 waiver conditions apply to NTMPs. The next two bullets kind of summarize, or the next four bullets summarize what those conditions are. For NTMPs that were approved prior to October 2004, the 2004 waiver, there is no application for NTMPs, and no erosion control plans need to be developed for the entire NTMP area. The NTMPs that were approved after that October 2004 timeframe do need to submit a notice of intent to come under coverage, and erosion control plans are only to be developed for the notice of timber operation areas. With respect to canopy retention, just the standard forest practice rules protections apply, and there is no requirement for development of road plans. So what's going to happen in this next nine months is staff are going to undergo a review in an open process. We are breaking it out into kind of three elements. There's a technical policy element where we're going to be assessing the gaps between the rules and our basin plan. There will be a field component where we're going to be going out with foresters and CAL FIRE staff to evaluate existing compliance and effectiveness of the forest practice rule protection measures. And finally, there's a critically an important public involvement component where we're going to provide several opportunities for public involvement and review, and I'll go through those in the next couple slides. So here's our process and timeline. Beginning next month, if you are to adopt this amendment, we'll begin to do that kind of technical policy review to assess the gaps between the forest practice rules and our water quota requirements. During this time, we are proposing to have targeted stakeholder meetings. These would be staff-level meetings, pretty much meeting with anybody that wants to meet with us and talk about this assessment. We are certain to be meeting with the petitioners, as well as the Board of Forestry staff and CAL FIRE, but really open that up to anybody that wants to meet with us to review, to be privy to and help us think through this gaps analysis. In this same time frame, we're going to be developing a field survey form and identifying a subset of NTMPs to assess, and we're going to be working with CAL FIRE to go through that process of selecting this subset of NTMPs and for doing and developing this field survey form. Following that, beginning in May and running through midsummer, we are going to be doing an intensive field effort, conducting field assessments and completing these surveys that we will be developing. Following that, we'll kind of go into assessment review phase for a couple months, where we'll develop our staff report summarizing staff's findings of our review and making preliminary recommendations. Following, towards the end of that, we're proposing that staff will hold a public workshop where a few board members will be welcome to participate and take public comment on our preliminary findings and recommendations. At that point, we will not have released the final staff report, but in this workshop, we'll be walking through our findings and recommendations. We'll take the feedback that we received from that and those meetings and develop a public review draft staff report of our findings and recommendations, then go out to a formal public review and comment period, likely a minimum of 30-day, perhaps as much as a 45-day public review period. During that time period, we will be holding a workshop, much like today's, but it'll be a workshop with our board members to walk through it, again, take oral comment, and this will be during the public comment period. There'll be a close of the public comment period. We'll, you know, take all those comments that we receive, consider them, and make a final staff recommendations to our board, which will lead to a hearing, regional board hearing in January of 2012. So it's an aggressive schedule, but it is also, I believe, a reasonable schedule, and as I want to underscore our commitment to having this be done through a public process and have numerous opportunities for folks to provide input to us. Which really brings me to the close of my presentation. As you know, board members, there were a number of written comments that have been submitted. You have now, some of those came in just late last night, but we've just provided the final copies of, I think, two letters to you this morning. You had received the previous ones earlier. The comment letters are largely in support of the limited term amendment, with two or three letters opposed to this amendment. There's letters from landowners who encourage us to get out in the field and work with them and really see on the ground conditions, which is what we're going to be doing. And rather than me try to summarize them, why don't we either take your questions now or move to public comments at your pleasure.
Thanks, Matt. Any board member questions yet? No? Okay, well, let's move on to our stack of speaker cards.
You know, I'm going to say one more thing.
Please.
Which is, I forgot to mention that on the back table is a handout that goes over this schedule, process, and timeline, and identifies the public involvement opportunities that say the same thing that was in the presentation.
Great. Thanks, Matt. I'm encouraged by the schedule that you put out here, and I'm also pleased with the letters that we received, and we're still going through some of these that we received this morning, but what we've read so far, it's been encouraging to read and get everybody's feedback, and to that end, I would like to keep the encouragement going to participate in this process, because it's what, you know, St. John's, what you can contribute to that is really what's going to help tighten things up and strengthen this. Mr. Corbin?
I did have one question based on one of the letters related to that. We had a chance, and that was one of the letters suggested that the current format of the waivers would prohibit someone exercising this discharge requirement option.
I don't think that is true. I don't think that this waiver or the amendment changes eligibility under the general waste discharge.
Right, and I don't think we legally can, but I wanted to make sure that I got cleared up, because I saw it.
Well, but we should, in fairness, say that our general timber WDR doesn't provide a very efficient structure for NTMPs right now, as is drafted.
In
practicality, you could always apply for an individual waste discharge requirement. In practicality, the general WDR isn't good for NTMPs.
I totally agree with that. And that's the history of why we got where we are.
Okay, thanks. Let's start off with our speakers. The first speaker will be Bill Keith. And I will do my best with names as I read them. I apologize if I mess them up. Well, Bill, yours was pretty easy.
But you messed it up. When my oldest son was a little leaguer, they introduced him, and this is Wade Key coming to bat. And he turned around and he said, "It's Kai." So, actually, it is Kai, but it does look like Key. My name is.
Well, this is a great start. Mr. Kai.
Thank you. My name is Bill Kai, and I'm here. I'm a California licensed forester, registered professional forester, and I'm here representing the California Licensed Foresters Association. And we've been waiting a long time for this moment. This is a really big deal to a lot of people. People that feel like they've been treated unfairly by an out-of-control bureaucracy blind to the larger social context of forestry, the land and the people. A free society can't live by regulation alone. Reading in the legislative declarations in the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act, I don't think the legislature intended to set up a regulatory system that would place itself above and separate from economic and social considerations to the extent that has been done. Forestry is a great thing. It's a legal form of cultivation. And yes, it does create jobs, build community, and pay taxes. Forestry is great, like agriculture is great, like medicine is great, and so forth. None of these are perfect, but they add quality to life, they enrich us, they feed and shelter us. We can have a perpetually sustainable flow of wealth from our land, including, of course, intrinsic as well as material values. It will not be perfect, but it can be both robust and renewable. This is a passage from Porter Cologne, PRC 1300, second paragraph. The legislature further finds and declares that activities and factors which may affect the quality of the waters of the state shall be regulated to attain the highest quality, the highest water quality, which is reasonable, considering all demands being made and to be made on those waters, and the total values involved, beneficial and detrimental, economic and social, tangible and intangible. Reasonable, considering all demands, economic and social. Sounds like something a free people ought to be able to pull off. Not perfectly, but reasonably. Members, we are in the post-Palpo era. There is no boogeyman. There's just us. Forestry is a great thing. We can, should, and do constrain it with world-class regulatory standards. But we should also embrace it as a wealth provider, wealth producer, social and economic, that must be able to compete globally in terms of mundane private sector terms like pricing points and market share. World-class regulation, world-class competitiveness. If you're not concerned about both of these issues, you shouldn't be serving on this board. You have our letter. We support the proposed order and ask you to approve it. Thank you for pulling back from the brink. CLFA members are committed to participating in this process and also ask that you consider rolling back 2009 waiver enforcement for timber harvest plans, at least for low-impact THPs. We'd at least like that issue to be on the table. We look forward to working with staff to get this right, and thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Lisa Wager? Did I get it right?
You did.
Followed by John Williams.
Good morning. Before I begin, I want to thank Matt for his presentation. I thought he did an excellent job. Good morning to the chairman and the board members. I'm Lisa Wager, and I was a co-petitioner for the landowners. I'm here to support the order 2011-0038. I'm also here to put a face, a family, and a story behind the objections that we raised to the 09 waiver as it related to the NTMPs. For over 130 years, my family has been ranching on Ore Springs Road, 15 miles west of Ukiah. For almost 60 years, we have owned the ranch that is still in our family today. That property was logged at the end, the turn of the last century and in the 1960s. And after my dad passed away, in facing inheritance tax problems, we considered logging again. After much consideration, we decided to do an NTMP to govern the timber harvesting. It took almost a year for the approval of our plan, and it was reviewed by CAL FIRE, the North Coast Board, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Parks and Recreation. This review included a two-day field trip where members from all of those different organizations or agencies were present and voiced all their concerns about the long-term management of our plan. And those concerns were then included into the document which now governs our timber harvesting. Before we began this process, I have to say that I was terrified about logging. All I could remember was some of the logging that I had seen as a child, some of it on our land, 50 years before, and I thought, I was concerned that we would damage our ranch. After the NTMP was approved and the first forest, or the first harvesting took place, I was amazed because our forest still looked like a forest. And I was thrilled. In fact, I sort of became this really boring evangelical. Every time one of my friends would come to the ranch, I would take them out, show them the logging, and say, look what can be done. It's amazing. And if today, if you drove by a ranch where we might have just recently logged, you would have no idea. So, as I'm sure you're aware, the NTMP is a framework for an extraordinarily high standard of land stewardship. Most landowners who choose to live within the confines of the NTMP are environmentalists, and I am certainly one. We have voluntarily chosen to selectively harvest our forests on a long-term sustained yield basis. The NTMP mandates that we grow more timber than we harvest in a 10-year block. That means every 10 years we will have more trees and more volume on our property, and we do that in 10-year blocks until such time as the forest is actually growing the maximum amount that the land will sustain, and the forest begins to sort of replicate the old forest. Some have questioned the legislative framework that can extend for decades. And to those people, I say that the forests that were ravaged by overcutting in the early part of the 1900s need decades to recover. And without a long-term plan and the certainty that that plan provides, those forests will never fully recover. I did believe that many of the provisions in the 2009 waiver, as they applied to the NTMPs, were duplicative and onerous. And I think if the objective is to curtail NTMP use and ultimately discourage the environmental benefits that flow from that type of forest management, then eliminating benefits to the landowners will accomplish that goal. But I don't think that's the goal of anybody in this room. And so I hope you support the pause button. I hope you support the 2011-0038, and I look forward to the workshops and the field visits. And certainly I would like every one of you, you're all invited to come to our ranch and see for yourself. Thank you.
Thanks. John Williams, followed by Matt Green.
I guess it's good to have an easy name to pronounce. But my name is John Williams, and I'm a registered professional forester. I've been working for 41 years as a professional forester, 38 of which have been in the North Coast region. I am a member of the board of directors of Forest Landowners of California, and I'm speaking today as their official representative. First of all, we just want to thank your staff for working with us to develop this draft order, R1-2011-0038. And this is an important first step towards resolving what has become a very contentious issues that were created by the adoption of the waiver in 2009. And we look forward to working with your staff in a constructive manner to create or to draft solutions to this that will meet the needs of the forest landowners and of the NTMP, and at the same time meet your water quality objectives. NTMPs are very important to the Forest Landowners of California members. Forest Landowners was the driving force behind creation of the NTMP. And as you notice, people have come from a long way. We have many of our members are here in the audience. And I would just ask, just a show of hands, how many people in the audience are members of Forest Landowners of California? And some of these people have come from literally hundreds of miles just to show their concern and engagement in this issue. Our main concern with the 2009 waiver is that, from our perspective, the science used by your staff to justify these new and, in our view, very highly restrictive regulations were based on regionally inappropriate analysis. A large body of scientific information on the effects of timber harvesting, including specific studies of the effectiveness of the forest practice rules, is available. The Board of Forestry, when they were working on the new anadromous salmonid protection rules, funded a literature review, which was a very comprehensive search and compilation of available literature it was available but had not been compiled at the time your staff had done this previous research. And we believe that a comprehensive review of this will, in many ways, support the positions that we've taken. Forest Landowner supports Draft Order R1-2011-0038, and we ask that you adopt it here today. We're looking forward to working with your staff, as I said, to review this large body of available science and to draft positions that will meet our needs and will achieve your water quality objectives. Just a couple of other things I would like to say. We concur with the statement made by Cal Fire in this letter that the 10 months, this very aggressive schedule, I think optimistic would be a kind word to put it. I would be very surprised if you can do it in that time period, and I would urge you to consider Cal Fire's request for an extended period. And the other is just to address a comment that Mr. St. John made Mr. Corbett regarding the effectiveness of WDRs and NTMPs. I have a letter from Bob Plant of your staff in 2010, and that was referenced in the footnote on the letter the forest landowner submitted, that effectively states very clearly that general WDRs are not an option that is available to in any practical sense to a holder of an NTMP. If you don't have that letter, I assume you would be happy to provide it. But I would, and if that is not truly the case, and I would urge you to have your staff clarify that. And thank you very much.
Matt Green, followed by Margaret Towser.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and board members. Thanks for having me, and thanks for coming back to this issue. I really appreciate it, and all the people in the room really appreciate it. I had a nice speech, but I've been without power for about 6 days now, so I'm going to keep it really brief and to the point. it's been a trying week, to say the least. I want to talk a bit about the duplication of process for just a second. In these times, we all know that we're trying to do more with less. It's just a fact of where we are in the state. And I'm a registered professional forester. I'm a board member of CLFA. And I'm also an associate director with the Sodiomi RCD. So, anyhow. The timber harvest plan process, I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. A plan is submitted to Cal Fire, your staff, the Department of Fish and Game, state parks, several different agencies, the California Geological Service, review that plan. Goes through a full CEQA review or CEQA equivalent review. During that time, staff has input to change, amend, modify that plan. After that plan has been approved, we apply for a waiver. I have to pull all the information out of that plan, put it in the waiver format, and then go through with your staff again the waiver. So we're creating a duplicative process here that Lisa mentioned earlier. That's already been done. Your staff is spending time doing things twice. I'm spending time doing things twice, and our landowners are paying for it twice. We need to quit that. We need to really get on board with a single process, form one permit, whether it's an all-arcing permit with Cal Fire, or how, there has to be something to reduce the time and the burden on landowners here. we can't keep this grind going. We're all going to be out of work, including you guys and staff. It's just time that we need to really adjust things and look at where we're at. That's where I'm at, and thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Margaret Towser, followed by Steve Vanderhorst.
Hi, I'm Margaret Towser, and I'm going to keep it short because I'm pretty much in agreement with all these people and forest landers and Lisa's talk. But we are I'm representing the Towser Family Limited Partnership, and we have the third NTMP that we got in 1993, and we've been operating under that ever since.
Okay, Steve Vanderhorst, followed by Peter Bradford.
Morning, my name is Steve Vanderhorst. I'm a timber owner in Mendocino County, and I'm also a licensed forester, and I have other roles as well, which I'll enumerate in a second. 2 points. First one, really quick. Yes, please push the pause button. The only thing I might add to what your staff has already said in terms of justification for the pause button is that maybe you should go until the studies are actually done and complete, until some specific cutoff date. The nature of such studies is that they seem to go on longer than anybody anticipates. Okay, my other point is that the draconian requirements of the 2009 waiver, essentially, in my case, as a timberland owner, are pretty much a death sentence for long-term approach to management on my land. In 1981, my wife and I acquired this piece of property in Mendocino County that had been fairly severely cut over about 4 times, and we're suffering the chronic problems from that. And since that time, we've planted thousands of trees, done all sorts of things that mainly arose from my own labor and other efforts out there to try and improve the quality of the stand and take a very long-term approach in trying to grow trees. Essentially, there's been no revenue, no net revenue since then. At this point, I'm now retired from being a consultant forester and practice only on my own property, where I'm now not only the timberland owner, but the timber owner, the RPF, the LTO, the timber faller, the choker setter, the knock bumper, everything. I'm it. The result is that, okay, the firewood logs, the hardwoods that I'm removing, I sell down the road, and that just about covers my expenses to the point where there's, net revenue is like zero every year. This has been going on since 1982. If we come along with the provisions of the 2009 waiver, I simply can't do that. There is no money to support any of that. I can't continue doing long-term management that way. I have to look at other options. This is not the way to encourage open space, long-term conservative management, or any of the other goals that should be part of long-term management of water quality. I'd be looking at probably the only possibility, parcelizing the thing, backing it out of timber production zoning, and starting, I guess, to pedal off 20-acre ranch sheds or something like that. I don't think anybody wants that. I find that anathema. I hate that kind of stuff. I don't see any other option, really, if I'm confronted with the sort of costs that would come out of this waiver. And I'll leave it at that. That's essentially where I am and the effect that I'm going to have on me personally. And thank you.
Okay, Peter Bradford, followed by Randy Jacobson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. I'm Peter Bradford. I am one of the petitioners of the landowners group, but I'm here representing myself and my family's interests. I'm a third generation member of my family to be part of an agricultural business, trying to make a living off of property in Mendocino County. We have successfully been able to pass a portion of our property through three generations, and it's not been easy at times. We're struggling to figure out how we can pass the remainder on. And as an agricultural business owner and landowner with an MTMP close to the maximum size in Mendocino County, the duplicative regulations that we sometimes see brought before us in the example of today, the 2009 waiver, is such that it causes maximum worry and maximum cost to us down the road. We are constantly now, as a landowner and as a person who is more able to be working in the ground than in an office writing letters and combating regulations that come down, we're constantly having to deal with this more and more. And the cost effect is such that it is actually mounting costs for us to satisfy regulations from one agency and another. I recently had an opportunity to travel back to Washington, D.C. at the beginning of this month with the California Farm Bureau Board of Directors. I am a director on the California Farm Bureau Board. And I was pleased to note that in the congressional offices that we visited, there was more of a call and a request for us to give them information, for us to participate in the process, and for us to let them know how things are impacting us on the ground from the regulations and the policies that they are writing. I would encourage you to take that example to heart and try to pass this process along at the state level as well. Our MTMP started out as a way to make our business profitable. Well, maybe not profitable, but pay some of the bills that we have constantly. We're actually a cattle ranch and a cow-calf producer, and the beef prices are not to the point where they pay for everything. And so we had the timber, which at the time my grandfather started buying the property in 1940 was worth virtually nothing. The logging practices, as my letter stated, were terrible, horrendous. We tried a small stint at logging in the early 80s, and we were dismayed by the fact that the only people that really seemed to come out ahead on this were the logger and the mill. The landowner was left with a pittance. We decided that an MTMP was the best route to go, and through the magnificent stewardship of not only our forester, but also us on the land, we have seen the forest that Lisa has alluded to that is a forest. And we are healing a lot of the problems that we have, seen on the ground as a result of the previous practices. The ground is healing. And I would highly encourage not only board members, but staff as well, to come out and visit our properties, to come out and see what's going on and see the water quality that we have coming off of these forests that are being logged and are being managed with sustained yield in mind. Lastly, I would like to close with the fact that, and it was alluded by Steve before me, costs are such that in a family agricultural business, you can only take so much cost, and then you get to the brink where you teeter on the point where you are now economically unviable. I'm sure that the majority of people and landowners that have agricultural properties also have a document that's called a certificate of compliance. And as such, it's kind of the last card to lay down before you close up shop and leave, but it will be one that is played. I know that I am very representative of a lot of people out there that we want to stay on our property, we want to manage our forest, we want to remain in a viable family agricultural business, but if the costs get to a certain point where we can't do that, we're not going to jeopardize the time, the blood, the sweat, and the investment that has gone into these family properties and not be able to keep some of that for our children. Thank you. And lastly, I do support the amendment. I strongly encourage the pause, and if it takes more time than required the 10 months, which it could, I encourage you to do that as well. Thank you.
Randy Jacobson, followed by Craig Lindrow.
Good morning. My name is Randy Jacobson. I'm a registered professional forester, and I'm also representing the Association of Consulting Foresters, which is a national organization made up of consulting foresters. So to get started, I am here in support of order number R1-2011-38. I appreciate your patience and allowing us to present information that hopefully we can make an intelligent decision. The issue that I would like to speak to is, which we've touched on earlier, are the significant increased costs that my forest landowners are dealing with regarding the operations of their timberland. And recently, I have a situation where we have a client that actually did exercise his options. He had applied for certificates, which he sold off 7 of his parcels. And it's been nothing but a huge headache for myself, for water quality, for Corps of Engineers, and for every other agency, natural resource agency in the federal and state government. What we found were illegal ponds that were built. We found illegal structures that had been built on the property. We found roads that had been, skid trails that had been used for motorcycle tracks. And we found, of course, Mendocino County's number one crop, and which these parcels have been sold to. And with that, what I'm trying to say here is, at some point, we can't push these landowners any further, and they will exercise their options, and that's what's happened here. So what I'm encouraging you to do is, and I don't know, Matt, if you brought that up, is study the scientific literature that is available regarding this subject of water quality, which there is a lot of good information out there as part of your review, and also conduct your own studies, because I see no way that we can do this in 10 months. But good luck, and I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
We'll take 2 more speakers, and then the board's going to take a short break. So we have Craig Blanco, followed by Tom Lawson.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board and staff, my name is Craig Blanco. I'm a consulting forester from Fort Bragg. I've worked for the past 30 years with family forests and ranches, practicing selection type long-term sustainable forestry. I wrote some of the very first NTNPs back in 1992, and probably were some of the largest ones. So I've been at it for a little bit of a while. I'll be brief today. I want to hit on 2 points. And the first point, I want to start off with a quote from the Executive Officer's Summary Report relative to the waiver, 2009 waiver, where it states on page 21, an NTMP is identical to a THP in the land use activities it authorizes and the threat it poses to water quality. I have a fundamental problem with that quote, because I think it's not totally accurate. The reason I think it's not accurate is because when you're done logging with an NTMP, a forest remains. When you're done logging with a THP, a forest may or may not remain. So you are mandated to leave an intact forest at the conclusion of an NT operation. That's primarily because of 2 reasons. Number one, it has been mentioned before, the NTMP requires selection type logging, it bans clear cutting. And number 2, which was mentioned earlier but is very, very important, is that you have to grow more timber that you're cutting, and on a 100-year planning horizon, you have to show increasing volume through time. So there's no way you cannot have a forest when you're done logging under an NTMP. Now, that's part of the agreement, or that's part of the context that these non-industrial landowners entered into when this whole NTMP process began. They said, we're going to abandon clear cutting, we're going to increase inventory, and in exchange for that, what they're getting from the regulatory circles is they're getting the right to have the forest practice rules that are in place at the time of their plan approval. Those rules stay with that plan for the life of the plan. And the second thing they get is that every time they want to harvest, all they need to do is submit a notice to the CAL FIRE, which verifies that they're in compliance with their plan. So that's an extremely powerful set of aspects there, because what it does, it gives a level of regulatory certainty to these landowners that have given up immediate income and have agreed to pursue this long-term conservative forestry practice. That's a really important thing that I don't want to leave here today without people understanding that relationship. It's the spirit and the intent of the NTMP that we're talking about here, really, and it's this regulatory certainty that the 2009 waiver, I feel, undermines. This guarantee that these people had obtained is being sort of taken out from below them, and that's where I have a big problem with the 2009 waiver. I want to mention another point which has been alluded to earlier, and that has to do with duplicate regulation. I mentioned that the forest practice rules stay with the plan for the life of the plan. That's absolutely true. But what does not happen is that if a species is listed under the Endangered Species Act, that NTMP must upgrade, much change, to accommodate that listed species. They do not have immunity from that. So when the coho salmon was listed and the endangered status was obtained recently, the old NTMPs that had not addressed coho protections had to upgrade, and in most cases they upgraded to the ASP rules, the anadromous salmonid protection rules we talked about earlier. In my letter to the board here, and to Ms. Kuhlman, I laid out the differences between the ASP rules and the canopy rules that are in the Water Board waiver, and they're literally identical. And in fact, you could argue that the ASP rules of CAL FIRE are in fact more restrictive than the rules presented in the 2009 waiver. Finally, just going to wrap things up, I want to make a point to another quote that also came from the staff report of the 2009 waiver. I quote page 10, harvest methods resulting in intensive canopy removal, such as clear cutting, can cause impacts to water quality. Uneven age management is less likely to result in adverse impact to water quality. Now, you know, there's people in this room that would argue that, but the point is this, that even by staff's own admission, they see a difference here in the type of silviculture you use and how heavily you cut the stand. And I would say that statement alone is enough of a justification to verify the future looking into this issue that I'm sure this board will undertake. But thank you very much.
Mr. Walls.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Tom Waltz. I'm a forester with Sierra Pacific Industries, and we do not deal with NTMPs, but we do deal with timber harvesting throughout California, and I am responsible for management of our lands in Trinity and Humboldt County. First, I would like to thank the staff for at least proposing hitting the pause button. I would ask that this board move forward with that. I would also ask that you would not put a time date as to how long that pause button is going to be held for. I think it's too early to determine how long these studies will have. I would just leave it open-ended and just say we will revert back to the 2009 waivers. So what I really would like to address this board about is the difference between the mission and the tactics. As we all know, and we've seen recently in the military, we have the commander-in-chief is trying to determine what the mission is, both in Afghanistan, Iraq, now Libya, a number of different places. The staff, his general chief of staff, military staff, are the ones who develop the tactics, which allow the mission to be completed. You, members of the board, are the commander-in-chief. You determine what the mission is. Your staff has developed a couple of proposed tactics to help you achieve the mission. But I would say that right now, the mission is unclear. You have divided NTMPs from THPs, and staff has given you some tactics as to how to deal with NTMPs. But realistically, the mission is unclear because you have a number of timber operations that were included in the original 2009 waiver for THPs that were less considered less risky. And those have been dropped, and staff is only dealing with NTMPs. I believe it's incumbent upon this board to revise or revisit what the mission is, what you're trying to accomplish. And I believe that your mission really is very singular. Your mission is to make sure that silvicultural activities, which is what is defined under Porter Cologne, silvicultural activities which are available to be addressed under a waiver program are the only issues that you're really looking at. And so I think you need to go back, look at Porter Cologne, see what your mission was, which is to identify and establish waivers for silvicultural activities. And I would limit your activities to that mission. So if I could do anything today, it's to ask this board to, as commander-in-chief, to look at what your mission is concerning timber harvesting and silvicultural activities, and then try and find a way to help landowners, both NTMP holders, THP submitters, big landowners, small landowners, help them find a way to reduce the costs associated with those silviculture activities. The easiest way to do that is to develop an all-extensive waiver program, not a general waste discharge program, but a waiver program, both for NTMPs and THPs. And I believe that when you identify that mission, then staff can certainly figure out the tactics on how to move forward with that, that provide all the protection measures necessary to make sure water quality in the state of California is being protected. So, please, if you would, commanders-in-chief, define the mission. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we're going to break. And then pick right back up with our speaker cards. I've got 10:35. We'll break for a few for 10 minutes.
Terminology for this waiver. My only hope is that this waiver pause can be extended to the entire waiver process. And back in 2003, the separation of the THPs from the MTMPs, in my view, is doesn't make a lot of sense at this point. It would be great to bring them both, because what you can do under an NTMP, you can still do under a THP, but the old waiver would still apply. So the other part that I'd like to bring up is the intent of the waiver is that low-impact operations can be waived. This falls on basically giving your staff, especially the professional staff, the ability to look at a project and determine what is the impact of the project rather than using a blanket set of values. And I previously asked staff, past members of the staff of this board that were looking at the waiver process to try to, the terminology we used was expand the fishnet, because it's my understanding that very few THPs are qualifying for the waiver because of the stringent requirements. It's too tight a fishnet. On top of that, when the waiver was expanded to say to include clear cutting in the waiver, the definitions and requirements under that were so onerous that it couldn't be used under most circumstances. A couple of quick points. One is, besides the fact that it's great that this board is taking it on, one thing that I've pushed this board and asked the state board to consider as well is that we're really getting into the realm of professional forestry. As we look at the impacts on the ground and the rule applications, And one thing that I think would really help this board to serve the regulated public and the public members better would be to ensure that there are some members of the staff that do qualify and are registered as registered professional foresters. We have on members of this board, we have lawyers, we have geologists, we have professional assessors, all that work within unique scopes of practice, and it would be very difficult for somebody stepping outside of those to have an immediate understanding of all the principles at hand. And maintaining at least one RPF, the Central Valley Board has set a great example of this by maintaining an RPF on their staff roles. It will be this kind of cooperative and base understanding as we move forward through public disclosure to basically settle and resolve these issues. It will be helpful to have somebody with a base level of understanding. With that, you have the rest of my comments in written form, so I won't read those again. And with that, I'd like to thank the board again for coming all the way up to Weaverville. It's always nice to have you guys travel and be available to those of us in the North State. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Siemens, followed by Andy Westphal.
Chuck Sancho.
I'm an RPF. I'm from the Eureka area. Had fun getting over here this morning. Quickly explain a little who I am. Those of you maybe not remember me. I've been testifying on this matter since 2004. I was here when you folks were put in existence. Craig Johnson and Frank Reichman and I ran around the woods a lot. I sent in some written testimony, which started in 04, and in your list of correspondence on number 7 down there, if you count them down. And I'm not going to go over that a whole lot, because by the time I got here, I was mad at heck, and now I got to simmer down. I have actively worked with Mr. Burke on your proposals. We still, after a year, haven't resolved all our differences and have one in place. If you go to the pause, I'd like to know how the $250 is going to be given back. That's one question. Key points and what you've got, and then I'll move on to what I think you really need to know about. In my written testimony, water is water. And I'm going to say some things that folks in this room might not want me to say, because that's what I do. I go around and say things that other folks don't want to say. Your detrimental standard, you apply that, you don't need what you're doing there. You've already written one. You got it in place. Use it. You've heard about duplication of costs. We've already reviewed all the things you're talking about. And some of the water course protection stuff you come up with, you don't have the science behind it. So, I don't know where you're getting that. So you've heard about the costs. Now I'm going to tell you some things. I've been running around the last couple of weeks, and there's a picture coming out of what happened over all this stuff. Your short-term fix won't get rid of the big problem. Thanks, do it, whatever. For logical reasons and moral reasons, your waiver, like I said, just doesn't need, you don't need it. You folks are part of a larger problem. Now I'm into my notes, it's going to get a little complicated. We're at a tipping point. I went to the Board of Forestry on a 2 a.m. trip the other day. I've been to the Board of Supervisors in Humboldt County and all around. You will find non-redwood species mostly are uneconomical to log right now. You folks are part of the problem. It's all been piling on. It doesn't seem like the regulatory folks are getting the point. The redwood still carrying its way. It's worth a lot of money, so we're able to still get that. I got a 13-acre NPMP, and if I don't give myself any money, I make a little money. But based on the last market I was on, and you've got this all in testimony, I'm at break even with all this new stuff. So some redwood people are dropping out also. And to illustrate this point, the Smith-Bauer mill in Eureka is down. No logs. Dug fir. Now think about that. Half that county and most of this state is redwood pine, or I mean dug fir pine, and there most folks are finding they can't afford to log it. Now, maybe you don't care. The Board of Forestry didn't seem to care. They didn't indicate they were going to make any changes down there. So you got an economic problem. 80% of the wood used in this state comes from out of the state. We're all fighting for the other 20%. Now this doesn't, I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll go away. Maybe the 20% will go away. But that's what we're fighting over. You can keep playing these games, and timber industry and the timber people have become irrelevant to the way everybody is regulating their state, and that's my point. One thing I find is it seems like timber people, landowners, whatever, they're on a guilt trip. Everything was bad out there, and we did a lot of bad things. And now we're trying to do good things. This was one of the good things we were doing. Without disturbance, and I had a Fish and Game Wildlife guy come up to me the other day after giving testimony at the Planning Commission, says, I'm glad you finally said disturbance, properly done, creates wildlife. And I've been to Oregon and seminars in Oregon, whatever, back in the 70s when we were pulling debris out of the creeks. And we were doing the wrong thing down here, but those folks kind of had it up there. And there was all kinds of good stuff that we were doing. But everybody forgets the good. We always talk about the bad. So you completely eliminating timber harvesting, and you go to the deep and dark, you're not helping the fish, you're not helping the organisms, because you need the diversity, you need the sunlight to help promote things. And nobody seems to care anymore. We're going the other way. So I just throw those things out for you. I mean, I could talk all day about that kind of stuff. I've been through some fish studies. The science isn't there. All this stuff you're talking about doing should have been done before you put 0038 in place. Should have done that. Should have had some experienced people in there. And, I mean, I could keep going on and on and on. I gave you my book to read. That's kind of interesting. But I'll leave it with that. And if you got any questions, one last thing I wanted to say, and Mr. Burke might not want me to say this, but we've been out there working with what you're trying to do. And we still, maybe I said that. Anyway, after a year, we still haven't come to agreement what you guys want. So the pause is good, but that isn't solving your overall problem. There's a lot bigger problem out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Westfall, followed by Bill Thiener.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. I'm a forest landowner from Ferndale. We bought the ranch 22 years ago, and in 1995 we entered into what I would consider a contract with the state to put an NTMP, a management plan, on the property. And since that time, we've logged four times, but the timber volume on the property has tripled. So we feel we have kept up our part of the bargain. We agreed to the restrictions and conditions that go with an NTMP. The regulatory certainty was very important to us. And the only thing I would add to all the speakers who preceded me is that it just seems on the face of it fundamentally wrong that the contract is now being unilaterally, or considered to be unilaterally changed. And I don't think that's right. So, thank you.
Mr. Thiener, followed by George Hollister.
Hello, and thank you for having us here today. I would first like to start and say that I do support the amendment. I would like to see it extended to such time as a new waiver can be put in place. I'm not sure that enough time is provided for that to happen with the requisite studies and meetings. I would like to further that with an invitation. I think it's very important to staff and the board members to actually view NTMPs on the ground to see what this is all about. I think it's very hard to picture what is encompassed here without seeing for yourself. And secondly, I would invite you to review some NTMPs. I think you will see in the documents they're very comprehensive, very detailed, and they supply a lot of information. A lot of it which is being required to be duplicated in other permits. Secondly, as to costs, I would hope in a new waiver that we could waive the fees. As many in the audience have pointed out, the fees and costs in California are very excessive right now. I work a lot with reviewing timber appraisals and preparing timber appraisals. And one of the big problems in California currently is that lending institutions are very hesitant to lend on timberland because of the unknowns and uncertainties of regulation here. I think the notification to the MTMP owners in this process going forward needs to be very clear and concise so that they have advance notice of when these scoping sessions, these meetings, these public hearings are taking place. And lastly, I would like to encourage that or point out that the incentives for the MTMP are very important. And when you take those away by adding on additional layers of regulation, you're going to push these people back into THPs. I don't think that is what you want or any of the other agencies want, so I suggest you consider that. Thank you very much.
George Hollister, followed by George Belden.
Good morning, I'm George Hollister, and I appreciate you allowing me to speak here. In the past, I have spoken before this board a couple of different times, and I've always felt that the board listened to what I had to say, which is, I find somewhat unique with boards that oversee agencies. My family's had an active NTMP on our tree farming commission since 1972. And I've been a timber operator on our property and have worked as a logger in many of the coastal watersheds in Mendocino County over the last 35 years. As a result, I've seen firsthand the short and long-term effects of logging on water quality. I also see almost every day the effects all logging rules have on decisions individuals make and the negative unintended consequences of these decisions. I support this board adopting order number R1-2011-0038. Hopefully this gives all of us a needed opportunity to hit the reset switch on water quality regulation of NTMPs and on water quality regulation in general. We need to move away from regulations that are driven by politics and philosophy toward regulation driven by science. I'm prepared to do my part in this. We need water quality regulation that is driven by significant and identifiable water quality problems that can be quantified. Rules need to address these problems and actually demonstrate a positive water quality outcome when they are implemented. All sources of water pollution should be treated exactly the same. One class of potential polluters should not be singled out because it is politically expedient. Or a polluter should not be singled out because he or she is in a fight with their neighbor and gets turned into water quality. We need to end the witch hunts. Rules cost money to implement. The board needs to be aware of that. And understand the impacts that these costs have on individuals and entities who bear the burden. New rules that are more process than substance, new rules that are put in place for their own sake, as I believe is the case in the 2009 timber waiver, and new rules with no verifiable water quality outcome must be shelved. I personally would like to invite board members and staff to come out on the ground and see what is going on. And I might add that the best time to do that is during a good storm event like we're having today. On my family's property, you will not necessarily see 100% compliance with existing water quality rules. But perfection in any regard is a fool's goal. You can also see that water that leaves our property is clear. We have not had a significant sediment discharge as a result of logging since about 1962. This is similar to what you see on most small landowners' properties. You will also see that on commercial timberlands, sediment discharges inherently are significantly less than on more developed neighboring lands. So come on out and see. I'm asking you to give us a fair shot. Thank you very much.
Thank you. George Belden, followed by Nan Denson.
Good morning. I'm George Belden, consulting forester. I have authored three non-industrial timber management plans here in Trinity County, and they've all been operated on and very successfully. I would invite you all, if anybody would like to tour one of them, I'd be glad to take you out there. Anyway, I just wanted to say I support the proposed draft 0038, and thank you.
Ed Denison. Followed by Jack Rice.
Good morning, members of the board. I brought some materials so that we can kind of put a face to who I am. My name is Nan Denison. I am a member of the Parker family. We own 2,500 acres of redwood Douglas fir along the 10-mile river in Mendocino County. I'm speaking to you as a member of the Parker family today, but I am also currently the sitting president of the Forest Landowners of California. I think they gave me the job because I'm kind of the mother hen organizer type, so that's why I'm here. I want to thank you for pushing the pause button. I think it reflects really well on this board that you recognize there was a problem. But more importantly, I want to be your partner when the play button is pushed, because that's what's important. We need to get you out on our property, and we need to make sure that you understand the conditions that exist. I'm a third generation forest landowner. My grandfather started buying property in 1940 in southern Mississippi, and in the mid-80s, we were fortunate enough to do a 1031 Starker exchange for property in Northern California. At the time, nobody wanted the property. It was very young, cut-over land that had been clear-cut and looked like a Mount St. Helens blowdown back in the 1930s. Our land ethic, our family land ethic, goes along with how we believe we should behave as human beings in this society, and that is long-term environmental ethics. We believe in growing trees for the long-term benefits that they provide, not only for the environment, but for our family. We are not in this for a quick profit cut and run. I'm the third generation. I bring my children up. Hopefully, their children will be trained. We plan to be here for ever. We're not going anywhere. That said, we believe those ethics are completely appropriate with managed forest. Profit is absolutely key. If these forests become unprofitable, then those of you that live in Santa Rosa, you know what those developments are doing. They're going to start marching up. People are going to start transforming their agricultural and forestry property into housing, and that is a permanent clear cut. You will never see trees again. That scares my family more than anything. We want to have a forest that looks like a forest. We're managing for large timber. We believe that our foresters are the finest. These people are the finest foresters in the world. We are so heavily regulated, I have no doubt in my heart that we are practicing the highest level of stewardship forestry in the world. And I really hope that you get a chance to see that in action. And just to draw your attention to the second page behind the pictures, in 2003, our family was awarded an Environmental Hero Award, along with other neighbors of ours. We were recognized for our stewardship and for the values that we provide. And I would just like to draw your attention to just something that was included in this. The language says, Leaving light footprints on the landscape is a continuing commitment by these ranchers. An accelerated recovery of the sediment-impaired watershed is expected because of their combined work. These landowner silvicultural operations have resulted in water protection, soil stability, forest productivity, wildlife habitat, and natural diversity for further generations to come. That was an EPA award that was recommended by the North Coast Regional Water Board. And so we truly believe that managed forests are compatible with environmental ethics. And please, we beg you not to punish the people that you should be rewarding. We are all doing an excellent job. The forestry that's being practiced in this state is superb. You need to understand that and not look at one narrow value and focus on just the fish. We know that a forest is more than fish. A forest is all of the values. Please come out, take a look at my card. We would be happy to have you. We invite anyone to our forest. Julia Butterfly Hill was invited, but she said she couldn't come. Her agent was told us that she wasn't available. So we're not afraid of anybody. We're very, very proud of the way we manage our forest. And we want to get you out there. So please, when that play button is pushed, come to our ranch. We welcome you, and we hope that it will make a difference for your education and understanding what is truly going on the ground in California forests. Thank you.
Jack Rice, followed by Pete Busman.
Thank you. Jack Rice with California Farm Bureau. I just want to start off by thanking Ms. Coleman and Ms. Olson for working so hard. They took a hard look at our concerns, and you know, this is where we ended up. So we were very grateful for that opportunity. We filed a petition based on those concerns, and they were willing to look at that. We all believe that there's room for improvement, and that's kind of what we're doing now, is we're embarking on an effort to make those improvements. And we perceive that to be something that's going to take a lot of work on our part and a lot of work on the part of the regional board. And that's why everybody's here and there's this big of a turnout on a crummy day in Weaverville, is because these folks, it's kind of, there's two parts to this message. One, that's to the regional board, hey, this matters to us, we're engaged. And the other is to ourselves, that, hey, folks, this is an important part of our lives now, is resolving these issues. And so this is going to, you're going to see this is going to be a sustained effort on the part of us, and we hope it'll be a sustained effort on the part of the board. I just have one technical point and then kind of a bigger one. The technical point is that one of the things we hope to resolve through this process is the notification for NTMP landowners. A lot of them don't directly receive notification. We feel that can be improved on. We're going to come forward with ideas on how to do that, and hopefully that's well received. So that's my technical point. The bigger point, everything's been said, and I'm sure it resonates with most people in the room, but is kind of a big philosophical idea, and building off what Bill Kai said earlier, you know, we're trying to figure out how to do it right. We're trying to figure out how you can cut trees in an ecologically sustainable manner, an economically sustainable manner, and one that sustains the social group that we have, this resource-based industry. We're trying to do that to set an example for the world, and that's a delicate and a difficult task to do, because there's other places to cut trees. And just because we shut it down or choke off timber harvest in this state doesn't mean the trees aren't going to come from somewhere else. And our concern is, you know, self-centered, yeah, we want to be able to use our resource, but also, when you import trees, you're exporting your environmental degradation sometimes. And the point is to figure out how to do it right in this state. And we've done, NTMPs are a great example of how to do it right. And so trying to resolve these issues while making sure that you have an economically viable industry is what's really the difficult question before us. With that, I want to thank you. Ask if there's any questions that we can answer after Pete's done or whatever, we'd be happy to. And we really look forward to staff and appreciate the approach they took. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Busman.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Peter Busman. For a couple minutes, I'm going to represent the Buckeye Conservancy. There's a letter from the Buckeye in the packet expressing the concerns. Humboldt County, we have about 200,000 acres in our membership. So, and we have a history of working with the board and staff, and we want to continue that. Hopefully, we can get something set up during the, I believe it's the May meeting when you're in Humboldt County, whether it's two by two or the full board or just part of the staff. So, after this meeting, I'm sure that our executive director will be working with yours to get something set up so that you can see the NTMBs on the ground, which is what you've heard today over and over. You've heard a lot of statements today about what's going on. I don't need to reiterate any of them. The biggest one is understanding what an NTMP is. And a lot of people think they know what an NTMP is, but it's not that difficult. It's a big savings account. Sometimes big, sometimes it's just little. I started my NTMP in 1995. It was a contract between the state of California and myself. I promised to, on my property, just only 100 acres, but I promised to leave 2.5 million board feet of timber, never to touch it. That 2.5 million stays there in perpetuity for the life of the NTMP until I get fed up with the NTMP, then I can clear cut legally. But for now, that, as long along with every other NTMP, has to be left on the property. Everybody starts off with something. The only thing you can log is the growth. That's it. You don't go in and touch your principal. The principal in your savings account stays there. You get to collect the interest. That's all. And that's what we're doing. That's what we gave up. And what we heard at the time was that we were going to be under the CAL FIRE regulations at that time. And so now things are starting to change, and that's why we're here today. So, yes, the pause, but we want to go back to that. I mean, you can hear there is no discharge from my property. There's discharge legally, but not in reality. You know, discharge is a legal term. Discharge is, there's no discharge from my property. You know, it's clear water. Everything has been done on my property and along with the other NTMPs to, so there is no discharge. If we do discharge too much sediment or sediment, you have the power to slap our hands. You don't need to slap both hands at the same time. So anyway, hit the pause button, learn about what NTMP is, and then and understand it. And realize there's a lot of people that couldn't get here today, and the ones that did, everybody appreciates the representation. So look at it, learn what an NTMP is, and remember, economics 101. My property, I'm lucky enough to be the fourth generation. It's been 123 years. And so it was clear cut in the late 1800s. So you've heard about economics today. Well, after it was clear cut, economics said it was for grazing. And for 30 years or to 40 years, it was used for grazing. There was no timber. It was cut and burned every year to provide grass because what the people needed was meat. They needed the wool from the sheep. They needed the milk from the dairy cows. And so that's what the economics was in the early 1900s. My grandfather, whether he got lazy or saw the handwriting on the wall, saw the forest start to come back again, and he quit. So I'm the lucky recipient of his laziness. And so, however you may want to, but I'm the lucky generation. So is it going to keep going? Or is it going to go back to what it was before? Cattle prices are really on the move. I mean, why? Because cattle numbers are down. And there's world turmoil, and cattle prices in the United States are record highs right now. And so, and timber is going down. Well, what happens? You know, you get rid of the timber, you get more cows. We're ready to, you know, we need more grazing land for the cows. And so, economics again. So, everybody else talks about subdivision, putting it in, and maybe that's more money, but then you lose the ground. So if I convert back to grazing land, you know, maybe for, who knows, another generation's lifetime, then maybe timber will come back again. Who knows? But economics 101, you got to remember the economics. So with that, I thank you, and hit the pause button.
Thank you. That was my last speaker card. Are there any others lurking out in the audience? Okay. Seeing none, do we have any board member questions or comments?
Yeah, Mr. Corbin. Mr. Chairman, and I apologize, these will be unusually long, but I'm trying to set up framing the issue and it's way more complex than it ought to be, but that's where we are. First, I wanted to thank staff for having the guts to bring this to us and look at a reappraisal. That was an always common behavior. They should be complimented. I do want to say I think redundancy is a very good issue. And I want to not speak in any great length on the NITMPs, which deliver greater certainty. It was a one-time cost to get out of the cost of each and every timber harvest plan, with one of the reasons being that was forcing more cutting than was good because you had to amortize the cost of individual THPs. And this is part of a whole series of regulations in California, one trying to help smaller owners, and two, get better natural resource management principles that can be driven by economics. I'm not going to talk about the interface of TMDL in the basin plans, although that's a component of this. I'm not going to talk about the forest practice rule changes that occurred, although that's very important. And I will refer to best management practices. I'm referring to that only as an ordinary person uses it. I'm not referring to it as Section 208 in the Water Act. I will exclude Lake Tahoe because I think I can insert that because the state sometimes looks at what we do every once in a while, so I want to make sure we do it statewide. And I'm going to spare us all the details of some of the driving forces of interagency conflict, which has also driven this. And I want to make one observation on water quality problems from timber in California. If you look at the numbers, over the years it's been relatively small, sometimes down to zero to about 3% of all THPs is what drives all this conflict. And if you look at the examples, they've almost all tended to be in a very short period of time, in a very specific place, and usually associated with some type of liquidation model. And these tend to be very dramatic, and they tend to drive forest practice rules, they tend to drive the state legislature and drive water quality. But I think if we look at those problems, it's not so very large and not so very ongoing. It allows a little bit more targeting than we think at the forest practice rules. The three examples, just so people know, was the expansion of Redwood National Park. Congress had voted the boundaries, they had not voted the money. There was accelerated logging in potential park boundaries. The Department of, California Department of Forestry, but Cal Fire, showing how dated I am, actually even asked water quality to intervene. You may regret that decision to this day, I don't know. And the State Board got involved and stopped the logging, and Congress passed the appropriation and that passed. You had Champion Timber Company and the Central Valley Board, which was going out of the timber business, and they, that was an era, pretty large clear cuts, and they just clear cut everything and caused some problems. And then you had the Elk and Freshwater primarily. If you look at a timber policy, I'm talking forestry, everybody, it's amazing how much those three events have colored all the laws and all the mindset. And if you think at how many timber permits and operations occur outside of those, it hasn't been as large. This started in 1958 under the Dickey Act. State Attorney General said sediment is a waste.
when the Port of Clone Act was adopted, they used the same definitions. So the law that means sediment is covered as a waste. There was not much done until, as I said, the State Board of Green actually issued a decision this board that we were derelict in our duty to not regulate timber harvest in the national area. And so that got us involved. And I would say, out of that crisis, the next day people said, we can't use waste discharge requirements. They don't work very well. Why is that? Well, there's three big reasons why they don't work very well. The first is the state legislature put within, we can't specify the manner of compliance. Well, that meant, hard to get a forestry thing about it with that rule. It put a burden of proof on the discharger to prove there wasn't harm. And I say that because one of the clashes we have, whether scientific or not scientific, is there's terribly different scientific standards between forest practice and water quality on this form of science. And so what did people do to solve the problem? They couldn't afford waste discharge reforms no more. They came up with a general waiver, and they came up with the basin plan amendment. 20 sediment discharges shouldn't exceed 20% Jackson turbidity above the natural background. And that allowed targeting, because then you could go for waste discharge requirements on a few problem areas that occurred. And not much occurred. What happened to that system? Well, the first problem, especially from the forestry and the operator, is that's a very uncertain standard. You know, what road level was going to prevent 20% increase in sediment, what level of storm event, what quantity would be considered deleterious? So there's tremendous uncertainty. And the second thing is, the state board has intervened and wants all non-point sources somehow covered, and the state legislature doesn't like general waivers. So one of the ways to try and deal with these problems then, and there was a 17-year about hiatus where there was a memorandum of understanding between the two groups. So I think what the regional board did is it went to what I call a robust waiver. And because it's a waiver, it's not waste discharge requirements, you need to specify the manner of compliance. Well, once you have best management practices, then you can deliver certainty to the manager. And that's a good thing. And they've been, compared to the alternatives, lower cost, pretty efficient, and have done pretty well. But there are some issues and problems with that approach. And especially as we get to about the third generation of what I call robust BMP waivers, and that is the more specific they get, the more they're starting to look like forest practice rules being written, and the less they're looking at. So I do think as we've gotten more and more specific, it does suggest that there's a greater opportunity for interagency cooperation, because they're both looking like they should have seen kind of regulation. I do think we have not advanced to the state. We need to go on targeting non-farmers in the system. We got the big ones, we included everybody, and now we're still pretty permanent in the regulatory process. How do we know it's a small farmer and what's a larger farmer? Was a smaller versus a larger problem. So I do think there's an opportunity also to target what's likely to be a problem that isn't. One advantage the MITMPAs have is because you're end product by trees, you avoid a lot of the lifting issues, the logging issues that, if you think about it, more than that, require historic driving forces. But I do think we do need to stay within the robust way of BMP, because
One of the problems on the 20% Jackson turbidities is California Department of Cal Fire came up with a different interpretation of the fire quality. And that was one of the things that started off this whole interagency dispute. And I think we've made a lot of progress in better cooperation. You may not see it, but it's much better. We also have a golden opportunity. We don't have a driving force right now. That's an emotional issue that tends to force all the regulations to look at the ones that could be targeted. And so I just wanted to put that. So in summary, I think it's going to be a lot. First of all, I will always look at science. I want to make that clear. I think it's going to be harder to resolve science issues between the agencies than to resolve this dispute. I do think there is an opportunity for targeting non-problems closer than we have in the past. And I do think as the BMPs become more specific from our agency, they are getting closer and closer to force practice rules, which does suggest that some of your agency coordination opportunities exist. I hope this is helpful. I'm trying to frame the issues in some ways that I think we can come to a future solution.
Mr. Chair.
Thank
you.
Mr. Miller. I want to, for one, thank everybody for coming here today. I'm a flatlander, I agree, and I'll say it out front, but when I look out the window and see snow and coming here, and obviously it means a lot to you. I would tell you it means a lot to me. I think this process is actually a huge opportunity. I hear you guys. I hear our staff, too. I want to actually address a couple things to staff here. One thing that drives this process, in my mind, it very much a process of, and I believe it was in the complaint, was, and the word was harmonized. We have a water quality requirement from the state of California perspective of the regional board versus a forest practice rules and the ASP rules that have since come about. And I believe that is, in effect, a big part of the opportunity. Part of that for me is to better understand some of the other side of that road. The ASP rules are something that I would ask for staff and Mr. St. John, maybe you could help me on this in the near future, is to better understand the ASP rules, how they apply, how they cover, how they don't cover, perhaps. In fact, I believe it was the speaker, I believe it was John Williams, that indicated that there was an annotation for how the literature review happened with the ASP rules. I'd be interested in that. As far as that goes, one thing that I would ask, I don't expect that the participation is going to be less from you folks, from the regulated community, for lack of a better word. I will commit myself to participate from my side as well. That I think that it is important for us to come together on this. I hear the process of duplicative process for months versus, you know, Board of Forestry, or not Board of Safety, Board of Cal Fire, the costs, and the cost implementation out there, and I think, again, therein lies the opportunity. I don't mean to be Mr. Good News on that front, but I think that is our responsibility as far as this board member goes, and us as an agency, to the extent that we can, to get at, to harmonize, to try and be better and efficient at this process. At the same time, there was a mention, I believe it was Mr. Benson, that had a phrase that caught my attention is a stewardship forestry. I actually went back and looked at and read the NTMP rules as they were developed, and in fact that was the major theme of the NTMP in my mind as I read it. And it's been my experience with landowners, ag landowners, and you actually, I heard also today, you count yourself as ag, which I think is right. Ag is a big catch-all, but nonetheless you're a resource-based folk. And that, in my experience, stewardship is very much a part of your ethic. You know, we heard from people that have lands for a long time, over 100 years, in several cases I heard here today. I'd like to see that continue. I think you're an important land base out there that makes the wide open spaces really count.
At the same time, I wanted to get back to staff part of this thing. As far as the schedule goes, I'd like to see from the conducting the field assessments, Mr. St. John, I'd like to actually see some wet weather surveys to the extent that I can. I'd like to participate as allowed through my own participation and rules thereof. I've got a raincoat. I'm sure I could get some time in my schedule, and I'd like to see specifically. I noticed from the mapping that it's primarily a coastal southern belt, and I would commit myself to coming and seeing some of these properties. At the same time, one thing that I would have for you, Matt, is the question of our basic plan standards and enforcement. If you can address that, because our basic plan is the Bible from which we live on. Could you maybe address that for a moment? I think that was something that maybe is of importance.
Well, I'll take the opportunity to kind of just make some overall closing comments from my end. Not that I'll take other questions if you have them, but I will address that. So, needless to say, since staff recommended it, we think it's appropriate to press the pause button and go into this this review period. We are committed to continuing to understand how water quality protections are currently implemented on NTNP lands. Needless to say, our agency's mission is to protect water quality through implementation of the Clean Water Act, the State's Port of Cologne Act, and other state policies, all of which are kind of bundled together and defined in our Water Quality Control Plan and Basin Plan. And fundamentally, what this means is that we must provide reasonable protection of water quality standards. So this review process is our attempt to say, well, what's reasonable for NTNPs, and assess the 2009 waiver condition provisions in light of the ASP rules and the whole book of forest practice rules, and to identify, are there gaps there or not? So we must meet our basin plan water quality requirements. Pushing this pause button doesn't change that. There are still requirements to meet our water quality standards as defined in our basins plan. NTNPs must still be managed in a manner that minimizes erosion from controllable erosion sites and protects stream temperatures. That doesn't change by pressing this pause button. What does change is the way that we're asking NTNP owners to demonstrate to us that they're doing that. And essentially what we're doing is we're temporarily suspending reporting requirements on the erosion control plans and road plans. And as far as our enforcement, this doesn't change the way that our agency has authority to take enforcement action when there isn't an occurrence where water quality standards are being violated. This doesn't change that. With that said, I'll make a comment that when we do these assessments, we're going to be doing these assessments in light of the answering the questions associated with this kind of gap analysis, and are not formal NTNP inspections. So we're not using this as an opportunity to go write tickets. So that's not what we're doing. Just wanted to make that clear. We really do welcome invitations to get out on the land. We've heard from this board very clearly that we've heard very clearly from you direction to implement our total maximum daily loads, and needless to say, we're committed to that. The way that we implement TMDLs, of course, is through our implementation programs, which include our various permits and waivers. So I do believe that having a waiver is an appropriate tool. It's a for non-industrial timber management plans. It's a matter of what are the requirements of that permitting tool. That's the question. Finally, there is a reality that we are an agency with limited resources, and therefore there's a practical way in which we do our work, which is that we focus on it's a risk-based approach. Where there are greater risks to water quality, we believe that it's appropriate to spend more time and attention on those areas that present greater risk, and therefore we tend to impose more controls. Flip side to that coin is where there is less risk to water quality, we spend less time, and frankly, it's appropriate to have less controls. So that at the heart is what this review that we will be doing is all about, is to find out where in that spectrum is it appropriate to be regulating non-industrial timber management plans.
May I ask to follow up to that, is that I would like to see for one an immediate process of bettering our notification to this committee and a mechanism to develop it, because this is a fairly rigorous schedule, and I assume we stick to this schedule until we know otherwise, that we try to get this done. This is a very important thing. I think as this goes, though, it hits the ground very fast, and my request would be to find mechanisms, maybe, that we could interact and communicate with this community and other agencies, participating public, whoever that may be, to make this a robust process. So with that said, and then the last thing I would ask is that on a periodic basis, you come back in front of us as appropriate. Because I don't necessarily, I know that there's a lot to do here, and I don't want to put myself in the front of anything. I just want to know what's going on in the way. And whether it's through the workshop that we participate with that fine, but I'd like to know to this board member anyway how that goes. So I want to thank you. I think that this is a good process.
I can respond to a couple of those points. With regard to the notification, we agree. We're committed to notifying all MTMP owners, and we accept your offer, Jack, for help on that. It is not easy, necessarily. We've reached out to CAL FIRE to try to get a list and have been told that list of all MTMP owners doesn't exist, which we find very surprising. My point is we're doing our best, but we're going to need some help, because by all means we want everybody to be notified. With regard to board member involvement, we will be providing some written updates throughout our process to be submitted to you as part of executive officer reports. We're happy to meet with board members individually, and then formally we'll be through that through the board workshop.
Thank you, Matt.
Matt, before you go away, building on Mr. Dorn's theme a little bit, there's two common themes that I've been hearing today from our speakers. One of them is the timeline that we have here, and it's an aggressive timeline. We have language in our proposed order that is very definitive about what happens if we don't get this done by February 2012. I want to be sure that we nail this, and do we have a mechanism in place such that if we're not meeting those timelines, we can adjust if necessary?
You know, I'm going to turn it over to our executive officer and counsel on that question.
It doesn't really read that way. It's pretty firm in the language, so sometimes we need to extend, so I don't know if that's something that's just our standard practice or if we need to modify the language such that it just accommodates that if we need to do it.
I think it goes without saying that if we think we need more time, we will come back to you and we ask for a modification to the waiver again. Of where the funds come from. But I personally am recommending to you that we work really, really hard to make it our top priority for our Timber Division to keep this project on schedule. There are a lot of people who aren't in this room who are really quite angry that we are making this change. And part of, I think, what they're afraid of is that we'll hit pause and we'll never hit play again. So just in terms of making sure and holding ourselves accountable to all of the people that we work for, I think we can get it done in a year. We may end up coming back with something like some shorter term and some longer term recommendations. I think we need to be flexible in our thinking. We're going to learn a lot. And we need to be able to accommodate what we learn, but I think we need to do something by the end of the year and not let this just slip slide off.
Sure, no, I support that. Gordon McCormick said we have a golden opportunity here. We have an overwhelming showing of people who are offering to help us with this, and I want to be able to accommodate that. And if it's something that we're learning as we go along, then we need to continue to make it right, and that's what we're going to do. Thanks. Secondly, there's also an overwhelming invitation for us to join folks out in the field to see their operations. And as Board Member Lawrence said, I'd also welcome doing that. You don't know a lot about us. You've been introducing yourselves, but our board, I think you'd probably be pleased to know that we have backgrounds that allow us to comprehend these issues. We range from ranching to dairying. I'm a geologist, and I spent the early part of my career evaluating timber harvest plants. So I do have some understanding of what you're talking about, although I can't admit that I haven't been on an NTMP, and I know there's some differences there, and everybody's screaming the differences between NTMPs and THPs, so I'd like to take that opportunity as well, however I can fit myself in. We've got a timeline that's here. It may work somewhere within that, or just maybe an invitation. I can talk to some folks about this, so letting that work. Mr. Manson.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. A couple of things that occur to me, having been on this board for some time and seeing other issues which you say timber, and I think some of us quiver. I would like to thank both sides here in this room, our staff who sat in Reading yesterday with the fear of a snowstorm and said, okay, in order to get this done, we will go get a four-wheel drive truck with chains. And that is how we got here. We didn't need them, but we got here.
We need them to get home.
Yeah, well, we may join you here.
We may see a tour this afternoon.
But the other side of it is that I want to say thank you to those of you who have given us testimony and those who have come as support of that. I think I see some friendly faces in the crowd from many, many years, people like Mr. Williams, Mr. Busman, Gary Reinerson, who have been through other times when there was not as calm an air. I think we all recognize that these are important issues, but this is how it will get accomplished. It will not get accomplished by yelling and screaming. It gets accomplished by reasonable human beings being reasonable. And so I'm absolutely delighted with what we have gotten to today. I think it is absolutely clear that certainly in this room, there are many, many people who would like to see R211-0038 adopted. And in that vein, I will give you, Mr. Chair, a motion to adopt. And not to cut off the comment, but I would just like to put the motion on the table.
So noted, Ms. Harris.
These guys are whining about a little bit of snow for crying.
We're flatlanders, so.
I know, jeez. Put some boots on and get a hot cup of coffee and just drive on through. So I'm a Trinity County girl. My family's lived here for, oh gosh, when you can count on your fingers, I guess, six generations on the same piece of property. So I have a heartfelt squeeze when I hear people talk about managing the land that your grandfathers bought or that you were born into and that you have a heartfelt desire to keep that for generations to come. I am really, really glad that everybody took the time to come here today. And I am really, really glad, as
being appointed to the board in the middle of the Palco hearings, refined by severe fire, that we're getting comments that our staff is doing a great job working with the folks. That's awesome. So I appreciate that on our staff's perspective. And I also appreciate the refined comment periods that we, you know, experience when people are willing to say, look, we have an issue, we need to sit down and talk about it, rather than the hollering that we've all experienced over time. So with that being said, I do agree that we definitely need to take up the opportunity. I'm a graduate from Humboldt State, and one of the greatest selling points of that university is that you have the opportunity to study on the ground. And you get to go from, you know, California's annual grasslands to the redwood forests and back and forth again in between that. And I think that we sit in a fabulous position with these invitations to do just that, to study on the ground, to take the opportunity to learn from the folks that do this. I dare say none of us would attempt to build a shuttle without consulting NASA or a rocket engineer. So why do we sometimes go into things when maybe we need to learn a little bit more? So I'm encouraging us to take that opportunity. I know myself, I absolutely love to ride four-wheelers on muddy roads out on the country. It's one of my favorite things to do. So I just hope that we can take the opportunity to do that. And then also, I just want to say that we have a good staff, smart people, qualified, well-trained, and they're capable of doing many things. But I would also like to encourage, with that being said, that we seek certification of at least a few of our staff folks in professional forestry, in range management, in the areas that we are writing you know, rules and regulations on and approving those. We really need to encourage that as a board to get some of our folks certified. Just so that we have an understanding and a respect for that quote-unquote club. When I see everyone who announced their name today, they made sure that we knew they were a registered professional forester. That comes with some clout because that took some hard work to get there. So I think that it would just add a layer of respect to our staff if we were able to have that, you know, added to the name tag. So anyhow, I just want to say that a lot of times we go forward just to get things done because they need to be done. But I would like us to take the time in this and keep that open end if we can, to make sure that we do this right, to make sure that this is done in a way that all of the stakeholders are well addressed and well heard, and that we listen to the people who do it on the ground, but then we also leave enough space that we might learn from maybe some of the other voices, so that might challenge us to do things a little bit outside the box, but yet they're still being done. So with that being said, I'll second Mr. Massey's move to adopt this resolution.
And before we do that, we are going to take our internal pause button for a quick recess, and we'll break for 5 minutes. The board needs to have a discussion.
Well, Mr. Corbett had a question.
Okay. We'll just take five?
Yeah.
For that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I wasn't trying to run out and stop the seeking fire.
I didn't know I had that power.
I would ask the rest of my board to stay seated so we can get through this.
I do think we'll run.
Thank you, everybody, for your patience. Mr. Corbett, can you enlighten us? What were we just discussing?
Oh, I wanted to make sure that our limitation of Section 3G was not amending or limiting the original 2004 waiver upon consideration by council in Section 10 Reservation Rights, which included the fine the waivers.
Okay, great. So we left off with a motion from Mr. Massey and
second.
We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you very much. Not opposed. Motion passes.
Thank you.
I believe Mr. St. John has something to say.
Just a comment before people scatter. If you want us to go out to your property during this our assessment, either give me a card today or just contact me. And you're obviously welcome to also give cards to your to our board members. So thanks for showing up.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. We'll give some air in there now.